Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Thursday, May 29th. I'm Ray Graff, gardening today, and we welcome back the Dream Team, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum, Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch. If there's a question, something is troubling you in your garden, this is the time. 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can email us as well, voxpop@wamc.org. Surprising number of people have already done that. voxpop@wamc.org for the email. And the number, 800-348-2551. Greg, Dale Isla, Bob, Fred, your gardening calls all coming up after the news. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. It's gardening today, and the crew is here. Bob Graves from Fatigan's Nursery in Latham, Fred Breglia of the Landis Arboretum in Esperance, New York, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, and Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch in Steventown, New York. Lots of great stuff to talk about today. If you would like to join in, 800-348-2551 is our number, 1-800-348-2551, or you can email the program at voxpop@wamc.org. We got some good ones already. Somebody sent pictures. They know the rules. No pictures. And they sent pictures anyway. I'm going to let it slide. 800-348-2551, gardening today. Fred, Greg, Bob, Dale Isla, welcome.
Hey, it's great to be here, right?
Great
thanks
to be here.
Thanks for having us.
We have a special guest. I don't know if any of you have met this person, but it's Sarah Gilbert, who is our CEO, the head honcho here. She cracks the whip regularly. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello there, Raimondo.
So you're excited to be here for a few
minutes,
right? I
am. Also, I've never been called a poison before.
A poison?
A poison.
You're a nice person.
Yeah.
So, listen, you were out and about today, but we had a great lockbox segment. Our listeners just stepped up in huge numbers. Right now in the lockbox, I don't know if you know this, there's a thermometer on our website.
I'm aware of its work.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's up to $424,094 in the lockbox so far.
Nice. That's awesome.
That counts on Monday morning when we drag ourselves in at 6 a.m. and open the mic and start asking for money. Why, Sarah Gilbert, do you think... Well, it feels to me like this fund drive is a little more important than ones in years past.
Well, it is. I mean, it is for the obvious reasons. And, you know, you've heard us talk about this before. We are facing funding cuts. They are coming from a number of different angles. They are very real, these attempts. And we are doing our level best to make sure that we are meeting them where they are and preparing ourselves to be here for this community for as long as you want us to be here. So there's that. The other thing is we're living in a moment. And it's a moment where all sorts of things feel like they are on incredibly unsteady ground. As a society, we're feeling pretty fractured. People feel isolated. And that's why, actually, it's such a joy to be here today, because this is the sort of program, as she said, shaking her pen in the air. Nobody can see it.
It's radio.
It's a visual. This is the sort of programming that creates and sustains community, I think. It's this sort of thing which really brings people together, a great conversation about something that everyone enjoys.
You know, this station has had there are people, and I've been here 28 years, there are people who have made pledges the entire time I've been here, every fund drive.
Mm-hmm.
And there are people here who have been pledging since 10 years before I got here. Mm-hmm. This is an amazing group of people. And the real goal here is not to interrupt programming and ask for money.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have a website where you can make a pledge right now, wamc.org. You can make a pledge 24/7 if you wish. You've seen how many fund drives now?
This is number three for me.
It's very exciting. This
is
going to be a great one. I got a feeling that everyone is going to step up. Is there any message you want to give to our audience?
I would say enjoy being with us in these moments. Actually, for us, even though, you know, fund drives are a departure from normal programming, it's also a moment where we get to talk with you directly about what you need from us. and what you need from public media in your community, and what you think of what we're doing and what we need to do more of and what we need to do less of, and all of that good stuff. So be there in the moment with us. We're so, so grateful for your support. It matters a massive amount that you are there for us, and we're really grateful.
Now, listen, you are here for only a moment. But did you've tried the strawberry?
I have tried the strawberry.
You can have another one. Dale Isla brought them from the berry patch.
It's on-air eating, is it?
Do you have any gardening questions?
Well, let's see. Oh, I've got so many. So, since I moved in, I've inherited a new garden. And it's not new. It's fairly well established. New to me. So it's my first year in the garden. So I had the joy of watching to see what would come up when spring started. And it turns out I've got a ton of beautiful lily of the valley, which I like.
Oh,
I've got
awesome.
I've got an amazing array of white, pale purple, and darkest iridescent purple lilacs, which are beautiful.
Awesome.
I have some maple trees, which I'm delighted with, but I don't know what to grow under them. And I don't want to just buy shady grass seed. Could I have some recommendations, please, panel?
We have some recommendations here.
Well, your garden sounds great, and it's exciting when you don't know what's kind of come up to see what actually pops up. Just talking about, I'll just head on to maple trees. So if that, it makes me think that you got a pretty sparse lawn underneath them.
Yep, that's right.
So there's a good chance that it could be a Norway maple, just because they produce a shade that tends to shade out a lot of competition, including most grass, because grass mostly likes sun.
Are those the ones that bud bright yellow?
Right now, they would have some flowers that would be happening. They would have sumeras, which are those little seeds that go like helicopters.
As a kid,
we used to stick them on our noses. The sumeras from a Norway maple would be 180 degrees from each other, and a sugar maple would be more like a horseshoe. And those would be the two that you would most likely have on your property. And also, if you broke the leaf where it connects to the stem, there would be white sap, and that would tell you that it's a Norway maple. So regardless.
You actually have one of the things already that might grow under there, and that's the lily of the valley.
You could transplant
some of that. It's almost invasive sometimes because it'll really take off. So that might be an option.
You know, I got to be honest, in my discussions with Sarah Gilbert, it seems to me that she didn't have much of a green thumb. Are you going to be able to transplant those on your own?
So here's the thing. When I was a kid, my mum used to drag me around garden centers, and I thought this was an exquisite hell.
Who owned the garden
but
shop.
But here's the thing. I've turned into my mum.
It does happen, doesn't it?
Never used to have a green thumb. Now really, really keen to learn. But it's also amazing how much I just naturally remember from my mum.
Yeah, so sometimes limbing up those tree branches, if it's pretty low canopy, would let more light in, and it would let you be able to grow more things and possibly even some turf grass as well.
Awesome.
And so I'm going to back that up for a minute and just say that, you know, maple shade is the tricky shade. Very dry. It's very... As Fred was saying, you know, there's not a lot of light coming through. So the first thing is don't try any grass. Don't even go to the grass place. Maybe some mulching. So mulching the understory of that tree. Uh-huh. And that will allow the soil to sort of be a little more active. And then there's lots of really fun native ground covers. Mm-hmm. There's Canadian ginger, which also grows in America. Mm-hmm. And then there's another thing called foam flower or tiarella. That these are things that you actually see in the woods already, but they would be very happy to perform under a maple tree because that's what they're doing.
Beautiful.
Yeah, and when you do apply the mulch, make sure it's just not on the actual trunk of the tree. The mulch should just stop right just shy of the trunk.
What kind of mulch?
So that's a good question. So there's been a lot of research. The International Society of Arboriculture has put a lot of time into which mulches are best. Mm. And it turns out that actually the free or sometimes free wood chips that you get from tree companies tends to be some of the best mulch. And there's a reason for that. It's if you think of that, it's actually more raw wood. And a lot of people think, well, it robs nitrogen from the soil, but that's a myth. It doesn't actually rob nitrogen from the soil. It does use nitrogen in decomposition, but it gets it from the air. So unless you're mixing this mulch into the actual root zone of the plant, it's not going to use it. And why it's so good is that organic mulches, they act like sponges. So if you get rain, the organic mulch absorbs that water internally, and it takes a lot of water for it to release it.
You want to take notes?
And in the case of the wood, it just rolls off the surface and gets right into the root zone. So,
oh, that's fantastic.
You know, it isn't necessarily more expensive is better in this case.
And the only drawback is the color.
Yeah.
That, you know, if you get wood chips, they work great, as Fred said, but they tend to be a little pale, a little bright. And so if you don't mind looking at that, then mm-hmm. it works out well. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, most mulches are sort of composted a little bit, a little bark related, so the colors are toned down. They're more of a brown, reddish brown.
It's actually the best mulch for any tree are the leaves that come off that tree.
So just leave them. Never rake. Is that what you're trying
I'm
to say?
Saying.
Absolutely.
That's
saying. A lot of truth to that.
Like, I mean, that's when you go in a forest, that's what there is leaf mold everywhere.
Exactly that. And it gets used up and it gets redeposited.
It improves the soil.
Cycle. Yeah.
The other thing I'm thinking of is, based on our own experiences, in the fall, maybe planting some daffodils and some other early blooming bulbs in there as well. We have a kind of wooded area where the bulbs come up and are flowering and pretty much done by the time the leaves come out.
Yep. Good
point. You may find you got to chisel a hole in the ground underneath a big maple like that because there's so many roots and it's so hard. It can be difficult just to get in the ground.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it is okay to dig in that root zone. So if you do end up hitting a root, if you see a big one, I'd move to the left or right. But hitting a small root is definitely okay.
Okay.
It's just trenching through roots when people, you know, now we got to put some kind of new service to our house and they trench them. They're literally cutting every root. That's
right.
A problem. But, you know, digging a small hole, putting in some plants, not a problem.
All right. Well, I hate to break the party up, but we have to break for underwriting. Now, Sarah Gilbert, fantastic. You know, frankly, you could host the show.
You want to? It's all you, Raymond.
You know what? Let's once again remind everybody you can make a pledge online at our website. No paywall, right?
That's right.
WAMC.org. You're going to be in at 6 a.m. on Monday for the fund drive?
Sure will be.
No, because if we fill the lockbox right now, we won't
have that's
to
true.
In.
Yeah, what, in the next 10 minutes?
All right. Dismissed. Let's take a break. 800-348-2551. We'll get to your questions now coming up. Basie and the orchestra here on Vox Pop, 800-348-2551. That's the number for this program. You can always pledge to the lockbox at WAMC.org. It's The Gardening Show with Dale Isla Riggs, Greg Ward, Fred Breglia, and Bob Graves. Okay, let's go right to the phones, and let's go to Kerry in Plainfield, Mass. Kerry.
Hello, Ray.
Howdy.
I got questions this afternoon, okay?
Okie doke.
First question is, I filled my raised beds with some new premium garden soil that I purchased. And then I sent a sample of it to the UMass Soil Test Extension here in Massachusetts. And I got the results back yesterday. And I got to be honest, it's kind of like a little over my head. But anyways, it says the soil pH is 8.0.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, well, that's what I kind of thought. I don't know if that's bad, good, or what do I do?
That's not good.
It's a little too high.
But it's typical of...
You can bring it down?
Sulfur.
Sulfur, yeah.
Sulfur.
Yep. You can buy powdered sulfur or what's called prilled sulfur, which is a little better to use as far as not smelling like sulfur the rest of your life.
Right.
You can get it at pretty much any... garden store or farm supply store, and there's lots of information on the web as far as the rates to use per 100 or 1,000 square feet.
What you're going to find with that, too, is...
Hang on just one sec. Kerry, do me a favor. We'll pick up the answer on this question, but ask your second question. Your phone line sounds just terrible, and if you ask your second question, you can hang up.
Okay, and my second question is the nitrogen value they found was 0.25 to 0.3. And it stated only a source of nitrogen is necessary this year. And they recommended using either dried blood or urea.
Okay.
And I was wondering how, if I choose dried blood, how to apply that.
All right, so everybody knows the questions. Yep. Kerry, I'm going to dispatch you now, but thank you very much. And let's go back to the sulfur question.
The thing with the sulfur is with that high a pH, my experience is you're going to apply that four times over the next year in order to get that down. It will probably take, I don't know, 20 pounds per 1,000 square feet to get that down, but you never do it all at one time because you can burn stuff because you're creating an acid when you put that down.
Uh-huh.
So you put some down, you wait a couple of months, and you put some more down, you wait a couple of months, put some more down, and maybe next year you test it again and see where you are, because 8 is high.
Okay. And then the other question about dried blood.
So his analysis, which is very typical, comes out and says, you've got plenty of phosphorus, you've got plenty of potassium, don't add those things because you don't need to.
Yeah.
Just add the nitrogen, the first number. And so he mentioned dried blood, which is a nitrogen source, and he mentioned urea, which is a nitrogen source.
Okay.
And soybean meal would also work as a nitrogen source.
The urea is a little hot. You got to be careful. You don't put too much of that
down. What
do
you mean hot?
Yeah, it can burn stuff if you use too much.
Uh-huh.
So the analysis on a dried blood bag would be like 8 or 10, maybe 12, 0, 0, and on urea it would be like 45, yeah. 0, 0, mm-hmm. and on the alfalfa or soybean meal it would be like 2,
uh-huh.
0, 0.
Okay. Well, Kerry, thanks for that one. We appreciate the call. Let's go to Ann in Albany. Ann, you're on the Gardening Show.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I don't have a question, but it's a question that I have heard. My sister lives on the east side of Syracuse with lots of all kinds of shrubs and plants in a ravine that has been overrun by deer, to the point where the neighbors finally agreed to let them bow hunt. And she told me that she has started to keep in the refrigerator a spray bottle of whole milk and will spray her plants with that.
Amazing.
And the deer, even though they're in her yard all the time, will not go near the plants. She thinks it's because of the fat content, which is why she says only whole milk.
Interesting. Well, let's find out.
The bottle in the refrigerator, and in 2 years has not had a problem with the deer.
Maybe they're all lactose intolerant.
In her yard all the time.
All right, let's see. Panel, what do you think?
So, yeah, I mean, it's very possible that I mean, we make deer be gone concoctions out of rotten eggs,
yeah.
and, you know, other products like that, pepper. If milk was on a shrub, I could see a deer not liking it.
I think there's actually I can't remember the source, but there is a study that says milk. People have been using milk. Doing a specific study that it's very effective.
Yep, and I also, years ago, We actually tried garlic around your plants, and it actually worked as
garlic.
Well. So garlic also
A lot
worked.
Of the preparations that you buy already made are rotten egg, garlic, pepper type. They're all in there.
Yeah.
And so, thank you for the call.
But that's a great, you know, another great home remedy there.
The other thing that we always tell people with deer repellents is if you try one that doesn't work, try something of a different formulation, because I've had people tell me that one worked and somebody standing next to them tell them that one didn't work, but a different worked. So
we found one that works. It keeps the rabbits away and there are a lot of rabbits, but they never come near our plants.
Okay.
But that's because you're sitting out there in the lounge chair.
That's not true. They're not eating them, Bob. What do you think? I'm an idiot? Oh, wait. Hang on. 800-348-2551 is the number. Let's grab one more call, and then we'll check the email bag for a few minutes. And Anna E. is in Poughkeepsie. You're on.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have two questions.
Okay.
The first one, I have a pretty large yard, and every year, this small grass pops up. It looks like small grass. It's sort of branched, and it has these little pods that don't open. But every time I touch it to try to weed it, things jump from it. They're not bugs. I have no idea what it is. I do not like it. How do I get rid of it? What is it, first of all?
Is it white, that the ends of the grass white that you see, the little pods?
No. It's,
okay.
All green.
And so, the pods are seed pods, and what's jumping from it are seeds. So the plant is flowering right away, and then it's releasing seeds.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, if it's in your lawn, if that's where you want to get rid of it, you know, usually mowing does disturb those things. Maybe sending a photo of the plant so we can decide what kind of plant it is. There are possible herbicides that you could consider.
There's some annual grasses that grow in the lawn, and you'd apply a pre-emergent. You apply a pre-emergent to prevent crabgrass in the spring, but some of these annual grasses, you apply that pre-emergent in the fall because now is when they start to grow. So possibility to control it that way.
Yeah, but mowing, usually, getting out is you know, kind of it goes away. You forget all about it till next year.
Yeah. All right. Good.
Well, okay, thanks. So my second question, I planted a red sunset maple late last fall. It was about 2 inches in diameter. The deer got to it. They rubbed the bark right off. I put some wound dressing on it. And this year I expected to, you know, have died. I read that it's easy to kill. But it has buds and it has leaves. When do I know that it, you know, that it survived, that it's safe?
Yeah, so that's
or is it going to die on me later on?
Well, you know, the verdict is still out. So first off, the wound dressing isn't really going to help anything. Those are products that have been proven to not really help. They're kind of a buyer beware. But you know, it shouldn't hurt anything either. So it's kind of, you know, benign. The real test is how deep when the deer rubbed it, how deep did they go into that bark and how much of the vascular tissue did they disrupt or destroy? And the inner wood's not really conductive, so it's just that vascular tissue that we're talking about that's just under the bark, the xylem, phloem, cambium. If they completely went around it and connected that, you know, rub spot and took it away, it's not going to make it, most likely.
Even with buds now.
Yeah, because the thing is, it's leafing out or budding out because of stored energy. So it's that first stored energy. All the leaves on all these plants were all, no matter what you do, they're all going to come out.
I would say that by now, those leaves would be completely unfurled and large.
That's
what
I'm...
As soon as it gets large, when you're going to know.
I think it probably still has lots of connective tissue.
Correct. Okay. Yep. And right now you're just seeing buds, not really big fat leaves.
No, there are some leaves. There are both. There are little buds and leaves.
Okay. So the real test will be if those leaves, you know, stay on through June, then you know you have enough connective tissue to keep this plant rolling. Okay. And then we want to make sure we give it like a fertilization program to help overcome that. Also, during drought time, you'll want to make sure you water it because that type of plant is now going to be a bit more stressed. So droughts are going to be more extreme for that to overcome. So just, you know, once a week, thorough water during droughts. And if it's like any weather like what we got, it's been nonstop rain, and it, which is good for this case if you are getting a lot of rain. But it's kind of a wait and see.
Yeah,
it's just really, you know, is the bark still connected on half of the trunk? So when you look at where they rubbed, is it just one side or is it all the way around? That's really what's going to make the difference as to whether it survives or not.
And there's absolutely nothing you can do to help it. It's either going to make it or it's not, except for watering, as Fred said.
Yeah. Right. And in some cases where I have seen them rub all the way around, if they didn't go deep enough, it can still make it because it just scratched the outer bark.
It's Gardening Today with Bob Graves, Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs. Now, let's tell you what, panel. We have so many emails. Let's try to do quick answers here, but complete and accurate as you can. But I'll try to blast through a few now, and then we'll jump back to the phones. This one came in at 7:16 this morning from the hills of Western Mass. Three questions. Beech tree buds either not opening or opening and curled with disease. What's going on? What do I do?
Yeah, so we have beech tree.
Beech leaf disease?
Yeah, so in Berkshire County. And there's not a lot you can do about it. If you have a few large trees, there are some products, some fungicides that are apparently effective. And you would want to hire an arborist to make those applications.
Okay.
If it's the forest, you're walking through your forest and you have lots of beech throughout the forest, that's nothing really you can do. And we're going to have to wait and see if we get anything, any kind of resistance from that disease and things bounce back.
All right.
It is a bad one.
Second question. Leland cypresses, very brown, desiccated by winter's high winds, ? How to care and how to cure. I've never heard of did I say it right? Or is it
Leland? It got hurt this past winter. The wind and the ice and the like really hurt those.
Yeah.
Nothing much you can do, again, but wait, make sure it's hydrated. That's a plant that has to be planted in the right spot.
Uh-huh.
It's really a question of location
where
that caused
live?
The problem.
Western Massachusetts.
It's still Western.
In the hills.
Yeah, so if it's established, it probably will bounce back, and you just have a lot of sort of desiccated ends. And if it's brand new, we'll know in a couple more weeks.
You know, the rhododendron we had that was completely shot by the winds and all the leaves got brown? Yeah. Beautiful flowers right now.
Just got to be patient
sometimes. Yeah, buddy. Yeah. Third question from the hills of Western Mass. Will painting rocks to look like strawberries deter birds from eating the real thing?
I wish.
No, it won't work.
I've not heard that. Bird netting.
Bird netting.
Actually used to cover an acre and a half of strawberries outdoors with bird netting.
That's a lot.
Because the birds got so bad.
Floating row cover.
Speaking of strawberries, you brought some. What do you got?
Yes, it's the first day of strawberry harvest at the Berry Path.
How exciting.
So not very many, but the season is starting. And they taste even better. You should have one if you haven't yet.
I think he's not passing them around.
No,
I
didn't have any. Sarah Gilbert had a couple, though. I'll tell you that. She likes the strawberries. Wild strawberries. Okay, and then you brought a cucumber, right? A little mini?
Yes, I brought a mini cucumber as a prop to talk a little bit about the...
What do you mean? Is it real or is it a prop?
It's a real prop. So to remind myself to talk about, 2 weeks ago, all four of us amateur meteorologists said, oh, the weather's great for putting in your tomatoes and your other warm season crops. Yeah. And then it got kind of rainy and cold.
Yep.
And so there's a lot of people that are probably looking at their tomatoes and maybe their cucumbers right now saying, oh my gosh, the leaves are turning brown, they're puckered, they're yellow, I've killed it.
Right.
But they will come back with warmer weather. This one is coming back at the top. It's got about 6 or 8 inches of nice new growth on the top. It has been a little more protected inside an unheated greenhouse. But I just want people to know that especially cucumbers do not like the wind at all, and tomatoes don't like cold winds. So if those newer leaves are looking a little ragged, don't despair. Just give it some time and some warm temperatures, and they'll pop.
Okay. And speaking of things that plant that Dale Island knows about, this email from Elizabeth. I have planted Brussels sprout seeds in my raised bed. From past experience, they've tilted toward the sun while growing to maturity. Should I stake them straight? I believe they do get enough sun where they are. And that's from Elizabeth.
So it sounds to me like if they're tilting that they're probably not getting as much sun as they would like. It sounds like there is some shade there. I wouldn't worry about staking them. I mean, if they're producing the way you want them to, let them do what they're going to do. But the fact that they're leaning does say to me that they are searching the sun.
It's almost by definition that there's shade on one side. There's no other reason they do that unless there's heavy wind that pushes them.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the only other thing would be wind.
Yeah.
Okay, let's see. One more email here, maybe two, and then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. It's Gardening Today with Fred Breglia, Greg Ward, Dale Isla Riggs, Bob Graves. Who did I leave out? Everybody? Is that it? Whatever. Nick,
we're not paying attention to what you say, so.
Why start now, right? Nick writes in, there's a 3-foot-tall catalpa with a countable number of leaves bordering our lawn and the road. I want to move it before either my neighborhood or the lawn guys go weed whipper happy. Can I do this now or should I wait till autumn?
Oh, I wouldn't do it now.
Yeah, I'd rather it be dormant. Yeah. But if you have to move it, you know, if the choice is weed whack damage and you can't stop them or move it, I guess I'd say move it. But also, otherwise, I would rather wait till it was dormant.
3 foot tall, did they say? 3 feet?
Yeah, 3 feet's kind of small.
If it's only 3 feet tall,
you
should be able to take up enough soil that it would hardly notice that it moved. Plus, the weather, if you do it today, the weather is, we're going to get another wet one here.
Yep.
And cool for a few days, and that would be a really good time
to do it. In general, the rule of thumb, if something has leaves, you move it before it leafs or after the leaves fall off because it's under much less stress at that point.
All right, one more email, then we'll take a break, and then we'll go back to the phones. It's Gardening, 800-348-2551 is the number. This mail comes from Mariana in Lackawaxen, PA, Pennsylvania. I'm in northeast Pennsylvania, zone 6A. We've had very wet, cold spring, and it continues, says Mariana. I've noticed that this on my Quercus montana, which is what, chestnut oak?
Correct. Yep.
I am in a ridge habitat. No other oak species appear to be affected. I believe this is oak anthracnose. Does that appear to be correct?
You know, we were discussing that a little bit from the photo. Generally, oak anthracnose, it shows up a little bit later and usually not as uniform. It could show up early, but not as uniform. It looks like, to me, from that photo, virtually every leaf has It has some browning on it. And that makes me think, you know, it could be something else. It would be good to probably reach out to like maybe Penn State if you're in Pennsylvania. I don't know if they have another extension service out there. It could be possibly something worse, like oak wilt, which would not be good. I guess there's a few cases of where I've sudden oak death has shown up in Pennsylvania. I did look that up as well. But it's not a disease that generally is prolific there. But again, I think, you know, in this case, I would, you know, this would be a case where I'd say either get a certified arborist on site or take a sample of that to Penn State.
It's also extension. We did get to see the photo.
Yeah, you did. Okay, and she apologized for the photos,
I like photos.
Well, but nobody else can see them out in the audience.
Oh, that's true.
As long Greg is happy, though, we're all good.
Well, it helps to give him a better answer with something like this.
Okay. And wouldn't you say that it was exceptionally uniform?
It was
the damage, and the. You know, the center rib of the leaves were all still viable.
They were.
So I'm not suggesting I know what it is, but they weather-related phenomena are also possible, not fungal-related things. Right.
Now, she says that 3 years ago, these trees were hit by spongy moth, and she has lost 9 oaks to that. It appears she may be losing more. All the trees were in good shape last year. Now this, so
yep.
Tree service is the way to go?
Yeah, I mean, spongy moth wears them down. It doesn't usually kill trees. Generally, trees that are not stressed can bounce back and recover from that. But she did mention, I think she said, a dry ridge. So that means it's, you know, those trees are been suffering probably a tad bit with water stress over the years. They are a species that can take dry, though. So, you know, chestnut oak can certainly take really dry conditions. They're that's where you find them in the wild, and it could be weather related. It could be they're brand new tender leaves, and if it got really cold, it kind of, you know, blanched them all out, you would see a recovery of in that case for sure. But I don't think it's anthracnose.
Okie doke. Let's take a quick break here. It's Gardening Today with Dale Isla, Greg, Fred, and Bob, and you, and we'll get back to the calls in a moment. 800-348-2551. Basie and the orchestra, Blues for Stephanie here. Now listen, you heard our boss, Sarah Gilbert, here at the beginning of the show ask gardening questions and also talk about the fact that this fund drive is really important. It begins Monday at 6 a.m. You can help right now by filling the lockbox, wamc.org. Gardening show on Vox Pop today, and we have the usual great crew, Greg Ward from Ward's Nursery, Dale Isla Riggs from the Berry Patch, who brings props now. It's nice. Fred Breglia from Landis Arboretum and Bob Graves from Fatigan's. Anything happening over at the Landis there, Fred?
You know, we just finished up a really successful plant sale, so we're super psyched about finishing that up. And it went really, really well. We had a lot of great support. The weather sounded like it was going to be pretty bad, but it ended up being actually pretty good.
Nice.
Sunday was a rain day, but, you know, actually we sold an incredible amount of plants on Sunday, too. So to everyone who came out, thanks for your support. And, helps keep us growing.
Outstanding. Dale Isla, what's happening? Now you're open now, huh?
We are there on Fridays and Sundays for people to buy plants. And it's exciting because today we harvested the first zucchini, the first strawberries, and tomorrow are the first Kirby cucumbers.
Hey, fellas, how are the strawberries? Good?
Very good.
Yeah, I haven't tried one yet.
Outstanding.
Good. Greg Ward, what's going on over at Ward's Nursery?
Well, it really is planting time, and people kept coming up to me in the last week going, wow, we finally actually have a spring. You know, usually spring comes in for 2 seconds, and then it's hot all of a sudden. So we're having the spring, which is really allowing everyone to maybe not plant your basil yet. Maybe this is finally the weekend to do it. But everything else, perennials, trees and shrubs, you know, even moving a tiny little tree is possible in this weather, even if it's already active.
All right. And also, there's Bob Graves. What's happening at Fatigan's?
Pretty much the same. It used to be that people would wait till Memorial Day to plant vegetables. And this year, it got back to that a little bit because it was so cold. Last weekend was phenomenal. Everybody was out buying vegetable plants and fruit trees. And edibles are a big thing now.
Yeah, well, that's what I hear.
Yeah.
Yeah. Number here is 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones once again. And we'll go to Poughkeepsie. Richard is on. Hello, Richard.
Hi there. How are you? Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Long-time listener, but I have never called in.
Welcome.
And I feel a little bit like Sarah Gilbert. I'm moving back to Poughkeepsie, and I got a house, 1925. I'm an avid gardener, and I'm still waiting for things to come up. But what has come up are the peonies, and they look absolutely miserable. And I think they must have been there for 50 years. Is there something I can apply to the peonies to kind of make them have more blooms and et cetera? I know they shouldn't be mulched heavily, but maybe I should just fertilize them. Would that be sufficient? And then I have one other question.
Okay.
Well, if the peonies are not flowering, then there may be a light issue. They may have gotten a little shadier in the last years before you moved in. So that's what I would certainly think about. And then, you know, checking that mulch level or at least the depth of soil that's on them now, because though you're not mulching, you're not doing it, maybe they were overly mulched before, because they really do shut down in terms of setting flower buds if they're a little too deep.
Yep, they don't like to be deep. And a lot of times people apply mulch because it's a spring thing to do. It's like, oh, my garden's going to get fresh, you know, look. And it's important to manage organic matter. So sometimes if you want a fresh look, it's only a matter of just putting a really, really, really light topping on that. Sometimes it's about taking mulch away before you add new mulch in order to get that so that they're not planted deep.
Do peonies benefit from being separated and divided after a while, like some perennials really get tired of being so tight and close?
I think if they've been there a long time and you have just a tremendous amount of foliage and it's like 3 or 4 feet across, certainly could consider dividing
now,
them.
But
unfortunately,
not the time
to do it.
Right.
And so I think checking what we suggested, if you pull away the mulch and the next thing to do is look in the soil and see if you can find those tubers just an inch or two below the surface. And if you're all of a sudden digging to China, you know they're a little deep.
That's a little too deep.
It is, yes. And then once you've determined the issue, you can certainly be adding some kind of complete fertilizer now that would they would benefit from for next year.
All right. Second question has to be fairly quick, Richard, okay?
Yes. So I have about 10 plants, and I had about 4 blossoms. So they're blooming, but I think the shade must be the problem. Last question is milky spore. I have a lot of grubs, and I've used milky spore in another house I lived in, and it seemed to work pretty well. Do you guys think that's a good solution?
Milky spore works on Japanese beetle grubs only. There's 3 species of grubs that are common in this area. So basically, unless you identify the grub, you don't know whether it's really going to help you or not. And they can be identified by someone looking at them under a microscope if you care to do that. But milky spore is limited in what it will help you with.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Richard, for the call. 800-348-2551. Now, listen, I was on, Sarah Gilbert came on, and we talked about the lockbox. We've had some pledges in this hour. We're at $424,734 right now. No, $755, excuse me. So let's see. Maybe a couple pledges here. Let's get it to the $425,000 mark. You can go to WAMC.org. WAMC.org. Pledge your support for the old gardening show. Let's go to Plattsburgh. Carol, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
First time I'm calling in, too.
Thank you.
That's a
good start.
I have 2 questions. One's about a hydrangea, and one's about, let me turn off my phone.
That's a great idea.
And one's about the Rose of Sharon. So the Rose of Sharon, I planted a year and a half ago, and I planted 3 different types. And the chiffon lavender that's planted in the northeast corner, I did the same thing to all of them, fed them with rose tone, watered as needed. It doesn't have any buds. I did the fingernail test. It grew 3 feet and had lots of blossoms last year. How much longer do I wait? It is at the northern end of Plattsburgh, and we're near Montreal.
Oh, wow. I would wait.
And it's green? The wood, when you scratch it, is green?
Well, I can't tell. So the Rose of Sharon that's not doing, doesn't show any life in the front, also on the northeast corner, one of them's budding. The other two are not. The one that's a pillar type, different variety, I checked with the fingernail test, and it has green bark, so I know it's going to survive. This one, the branches are supple. They're not brittle. Well, there's a few that are brittle, but not to break off. But I can't really tell if it's green, believe it or not.
No, interesting.
It doesn't.
I would certainly wait at least another 2 or 3 weeks. Yeah. Sometimes it's the middle of June before they leaf out.
Yeah, they are later to leaf out than a lot of other plants. I'm a little bit concerned that you can't tell only because when it is green and you had no problem telling that it was green on the other ones, you know, it should be uniform in that sort of sense. But
except that it's a different species, so that's why I wondered.
Yeah, and you know, I think waiting a little bit more, you know, would be the key. You know, by the middle of June, if you don't see anything, it's probably, you know, not a good sign. Certain ones are going to be maybe a little bit more, you know, prone to winter damage, which is, you know.
Yeah, and I didn't cover it, but I didn't cover any of them, and I've had them for 2 years.
Yep, and they are
so
fairly
that's
tough.
That's the other question. Should I cover with burlap in the winter to protect them? There's different views online.
I think Plattsburgh is a little cold for any of the Cereacus hibiscus, any of those Rose of Sharon types. Yeah. So I would probably always do some kind of protection, that, you know, a little burlap wrapping, a little burlap screen of some kind. The other thing is, if you can't tell from the top branches whether it's green or not, you could work your way down the plant toward
the middle. No, I did go lower.
I didn't do it.
And you can't, I didn't do it at the top.
And you can't see anything that you would call green in there.
Mm. No. Yeah. And that's why I'm hesitant. And I bought a Hortensia macrophylla to think about putting in that spot. And I thought, well, I could put it in a pot and wait 3 weeks or 2 weeks, like you're saying, to see if this buds. Can I transplant that again if this ends up being dead, that I can put that in the ground?
Sure. No problem.
Okay.
And Carol, remember, summer is coming in Plattsburgh, August 17th to 18th.
Yeah. The other question about the roses, Sharon, I treat them like roses. I don't feed them as often, but I fed last year 2 or 3 times the Rose of Sharon Rose Tone, the organic, and I water as needed. Is that I fed once in early May, because it's not blooming or no signs of these two or no signs of real life. I shouldn't feed them again until I see buds, right?
Wait till you see some activity. Yeah,
that's more than enough fertilizer. I don't think you need to do anything else right now.
Yeah. All right, Carol, thank you for a first time call. We appreciate it. This email came in way early in the day. This is from Richard. The heptacodium tree at our demonstration garden appears to have died from verticillium wilt. Nearly all leaves dropped last summer, now only leaves on one small branch. Would a crabapple be a safe replacement in wilt-infected soil?
I would say you could put a crabapple there, yeah.
Yeah, and, I don't think that'd be a problem.
Yeah, and it may be another reason why it also...
We saw some winter damage on those this year.
That one could get hurt.
Yep. And heptacodium it could get verticillium, but it's not like it doesn't have a lot of those tons. It's secondary. There's another stressor involved. But generally, crabapple, though, if it did have it, you're going to be fine.
All right. Joan in Schenectady has been waiting for about 45 minutes. Joan, go ahead.
It's all right. I've learned so much, and I'm so excited to hear that our drive is going so well.
It's going well.
And I'll be joining you next week on the phones for sure.
Oh, you're coming in? Oh, great. We'll see you then.
Sure.
Excellent.
Yeah. Now, I received a gift recently of canna lilies, if I'm pronouncing it right, C-A-N-N-A lilies, big, giant things. I think it's a rhizomes, but they're bigger than my whole forearm. I want to know, how deep do I plant them? Do they like rich soil? And if the garden is somewhat shady, but a lot of sun in at certain times of day, will it work?
Okay.
Yeah, sure. So they would definitely like rich soil. They definitely can be planted similar to, say, like a dahlia tuber. So you can get them a little deeper than we talk about when we talk about with peony. So if, you know, a few inches of soil on top, and they love nice hot sunny locations. That's where they perform best. They're going to flower by midsummer. You know, the foliage gets nice and big that way. But I have also seen them do, you know, pretty well in part sun. So So I think it has to do with, you know, where you want to put them and what you're hoping for.
Often in that situation, cool. an hour or two sun one way or the other can make the difference. It doesn't take a lot, and you just don't know till you try. You just don't know.
All right, Joan, we got to move it along here, but thank you so much. And let's see, we'll go to Schuylerville. Rich, you're on. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call.
Yep.
I have a hedgerow of dinner plate hibiscus, and they grow up to be beautiful 4-foot-tall plants, but then the leaves get laced out. Right now, they're standing about 6 inches tall, and they're covered with black flies. Yeah. And then as they mature, I'll see these tiny little green worms, I think, that are eating the plant.
Yep.
How do I eliminate this?
So as for products that are out there and available, that spinosad product is very effective. It's an organic fungicide soup, I think, is what it
Delicious.
Is. and you would need to make, applications on primarily the underside of the leaf, but both sides, and you'd probably want to do that two or three times in this next few weeks coming. So about, 7-10 days apart, just to be sure you got them all.
Even your oils or soaps would work, but if you don't hit the insect, you don't get it. So
yeah or BT.
BT.
As a bacterial insecticide, since it's a caterpillar, little worms that you're seeing, that will also get it. But again, you need to make sure they're eating it.
Yep. Yeah.
And BT is botulism?
I don't think it's a caterpillar.
Bacillus thuriensis.
It's a
bacteria.
Okay. I think it's a true bug of some kind.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's not a moth that lays those eggs. It's something else.
Okay.
And I can't remember. So
we've never seen.
Is it a sawfly?
Yeah, it might be a sawfly.
Might be a sawfly.
So, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, in that case,
they're tiny little black flies that are all over it right now.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it's sawfly.
Yeah, so the BT is specific to, families of insects. And so I'm not sure that that's going to be as effective as, almost any other general purpose insecticide would work.
All right, we only have a minute left here. Rich, we're going to let you go. Thank you very much. From Katona, and we have an email from Corey. And Katona's down in Westchester. It's pretty far south of Albany, Lower Hudson Valley. And looks like a familiar problem. Corey writes, my rhododendron has some kind of disease with brown withered leaves, as do many others. What is this disease? A fungus? A virus? Is there anything I can do to restore the plant and prevent the spread to other healthy rhododendrons?
Really depends on how old the plant is. It could be winter damage, as we've talked before, if it's an older plant. Younger plants will get Phytophthora disease if it's a newly planted or a year or two old in a wet ground. Phytophthora will do it. Without more information, we don't really know.
I think it's probably too early for any fungal issues to really show up, even in Katona. And I think he's looking at winter damage that he just noticed.
That's what I would suspect.
Yeah. Ray, I think you can answer this.
Well, it'll come back if you pray very hard. And Katona's beautiful. Have you ever been down to Katona?
I've been by it.
I love that. There. And if you ever get down there, you go to the Muskoot Tavern. Tremendous pizza. Oh, gosh.
He knows where the taverns are,
How did you notice that? All right, listen, Bob Graves, since you're such a wise guy, how do people find Fatigan's?
Fatigan's, we're on the Troy Schenectady Road in Latham, 2.5 miles west of the Northway.
Fred Breglia, how do we find the Landis Arboretum already?
We're at 174 Lape Road in Esperance, New York, and our website's landisarboretum.org.
Dale Isla Riggs, the Berry Patch.
We've got our website, theberrypatch.net, or our Facebook page, where we are now on day 10 of the 12 days of tomato planting season.
Oh, exciting. And Greg Ward, Ward's Nursery.
We're a bit east of here in Great Barrington, Massachusetts, 600 South Main Street, or wardsnursery.com.
All right. Listen, everybody, thanks so much. And remember, if you're listening at home, show your support for the Gardening Vox Pop Show. Make a quick pledge. Doesn't have to be any great amount, few bucks. WAMC.org, and thank you in advance. Support comes from Ballet Flowers and Design, Malta, New York, a family-owned garden center and flowering farm offering landscape, wedding design services, perennials, annuals, herbs, and interactive classes. BalletFlowers.com. Capital Roots, celebrating 50 years of making local food and green spaces accessible to all through mobile markets, community gardens, and innovative programs. CapitalRoots.org. And the New York State Kinship Navigator, providing information on education, health, financial, and legal services for children in kinship care, nysnavigator.org. Thanks again to Fred Bregley, Bob Graves, Greg Ward, and Dale Isla Riggs for being here. Thanks to Mike Bowen, our engineer. Thanks to Susie Chekai for screening the calls. I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow on Food Friday, oh, beautiful, healthy eating with Holly Shelowitz. We'll see you tomorrow at 2.